Ventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. We are underwritten locally by the Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, entrepreneur, author, speaker, and helpful coach to small business owners across the country. And today we're welcoming slash preparing to learn from Andrew Schmitz, co-founder of Proceed.app. Andrew, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on, James.
Thanks for being on the show. I'm excited because I love talking to people that got essentially software making them money. Because there's like an endless multiplier, which I love.
So I agree. I love software for that very reason as well.
Yeah, there seem to be a lot of companies that are doing okay with software. So I think you picked a right niche.
Yeah, well, we'll see. All right, well, we'll let the audience decide, I guess.
Huh? Yeah, that's fair. That's totally fair. Why don't we start with you telling us what is Proceed.app?
Yeah, happy to. So Proceed.app is a cloud-based mobile app and browser app. Basically, businesses use us to create standard operating procedures, training materials, safety instructions, work guides, and other forms of operational documentation using photos and videos. So we call ourselves a visual knowledge management system. And we help businesses train employees, you know, support employees, all that jazz through visual operational documents.
All right. So it sounds like, if I understand this correctly, the problem that you're solving is essentially people were either messing up or misunderstanding what a given company was doing or is doing, or employees were just not being trained very well or efficiently. Is that?
Yeah, exactly. So the kind of problems or challenges that we help businesses through, they kind of vary, but at the end of the day, if you're depending on people doing things with their hands, we're a more efficient, a more thorough way of showing people what to do versus mm-hmm. telling them what to do with text-based documentation. You know, and as it turns out, 65% of humans identify as visual learners, yet the majority of our operational documents are text-based.
Sure.
So, you know, we like to say at Proceed, you know, 65% of humans are visual learners. Well, 65% of your employees are most likely visual learners. So why not use visuals to train them, to capture the knowledge that they know about your business as well? So, you know, holding on to institutional knowledge, your tribal knowledge, you know, more importantly, just being really quick in terms of how to show people what to do versus having them read manuals and binders that sit on shelves.
All right. I just picture the kid that got hired at McDonald's that's just thrown in some back room to just watch these videos.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so food service like McDonald's is definitely an industry that we play in. The industries that we probably have more traction in our manufacturing facilities,
all right,
as well as fabrication centers and distribution centers, logistics. So, you know, they're usually like really highly technical positions and jobs that have a lot of know-how and technical knowledge, you know, and we just make it easier for them to create standard operating procedures and training materials. You know, the thing I think about, James, you know, something that I bring up often when talking about Proceed.app is, you know, if you had to create a standard operating procedure on mm-hmm. how to tie your shoes, right? What words would you type into a Google Doc to make that happen?
Kindergartner.
Right? I mean, like, it's such a simple task. We all yeah. know how to tie your shoes. But like, what words would you use to describe that process? It would be really difficult to choose.
It would be extremely difficult. Yeah, I'm just thinking now, I got a kid that I've been trying to teach him to tie his shoes for 2 years now.
Yeah.
And he does it. But every time he does it, I look at his shoes and I'm like, those aren't tight.
Yeah.
You're going to lose your shoe when you're running or whatever.
If you had to text him, you know, and I know he's 2 years old, but if you had to text him instructions, like, what words would you use, right?
Oh, boy.
So it's way,
screw it. Get Velcro.
It's way easier to capture that process using visuals. And it turns out the same is true in a lot of business operations. You know, it's easier to take photos and videos to show people what to do than it is to sit there and try to think of words and type words onto a piece of paper that maybe one person will read one way and another person will read another way.
Sure. So you avoid the misinterpretation as well.
Exactly. So these are kind of the problems that we help businesses with. You know, it's more efficient, it's more thorough, and it's easier. You know, you don't have to be a videographer or photographer to do this stuff. It's easy in the mobile app. You capture everything directly in the app. There's no file management. If you know how to use like Facebook or social media platforms, you know how to use Proceed.app.
All right.
So that's in a nutshell, kind of some of the issues and problems that we help with.
Gotcha. So how long have you, are there business partners involved?
Yeah. So I'm really fortunate to have two awesome business partners, Darren and Mike. They are the technical end, the sales and product, what we call product owner end, so project manager, but sales, marketing, and then product owners are my roles. But yeah, Darren and Mike are on the team. We've been launched for about a year. At the end of January in 2020 was when we brought our system online. So we've had a fun year of pivots and growth. And we, you know, 2020, I think for a lot of business owners was way more than we bargained for. So, but we were able to make it through and had a lot of positive growth, learned a lot about our business and about our customers. So we've been around for about a year and Darren and Mike are my business partners.
Okay. So how did you guys come up with this idea? Were you at a job and you're like, oh my gosh, the training here is terrible?
Well, I'll tell you this. So I've been an entrepreneur for as long as I can remember. I mean, at least maybe not in the official sense, but I've always loved solving problems, building things, seeing if I can make enough value for someone to give me some money in return, you know, similar to, I'm sure you, James. I've been doing that kind of stuff for a while. I had a business in middle school, actually, a DJing business that I grew. I hated DJing, but I could make some money doing it. And I ended up hiring other people to do it for me and did that. Middle school and high school. Yeah. End of middle school is when I started the actual business. But I realized, you know, I didn't want to be a DJ very long or for the rest of my life. So I quit that. But something that I like to point out is I've always been a visual learner, you know, in that business and in my work and in other ventures. I've always, you know, thought to myself, like, you know, if I'm going to show someone else how to do this or hire employees, I want to support them with either a training video or training manual. So I tried college for a while. College wasn't for me. Dropped out of college. I ended up getting a job offer, which kind of accelerated my decision to drop out of college at a software company. And that's when I fell in love with cloud-based companies, the margins, the ability to serve people way outside your neighborhood and connect with people from all parts of the globe through the internet. I thought that was just way cool. And you know, there's still a lot, it's in many ways a new frontier. There's so many things to discover in the internet space still for entrepreneurs. So anyways, fell in love with cloud-based companies. And then while working at that software company, I wanted to kind of pick up a side hustle again. So I started consulting with small businesses. I'd go in and create training manuals and training videos and then build a private training websites for clients. And how procedure.
Hold on a second.
Yeah.
You're working for the software company and you're like, I have the most boring side hustle idea in the world.
Yeah.
I'm going to help businesses train their people. Really?
I love operations. And actually, you know, I was a project manager at the software company. So I just love, you know, managing and not really, I hate the word managing, but empowering other people to be good at their jobs, right? And keeping everyone aligned. So I didn't initially start the side hustle in training and training video development and training manual development. What it was just kind of a media solution. So I built websites for people, really different miscellaneous like media jobs. But what I ended up getting known for was training videos and manuals.
Really?
Yeah. And being very visual about it. So like my manuals weren't full of text. They were like huge images with, call outs and that kind of stuff, graphics. And my videos were the same way. And so that's kind of what I got known for. I did some work with a couple of companies, mainly manufacturing companies. And how Proceed came about is I actually ran out of vacation time at my full-time job. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't go on site with my camera and shoot videos. And I had a client that approached me with a big project. They had a press that they wanted to document a bunch of things on. And he, the business owner said, can you come in and do your normal process? I did work with them on a different part of their business earlier. So he knew my services and I was like, hey, I would do this, but I just don't have vacation time. I can't take off and come in and do my normal process. So he's like, is there any way you can help us out with this? So what we did was I had the employees at the business actually take photos and videos on their phones and then text them to me. And then I would at night take the photos and videos that they've texted me and try to make something out of it. And it was really messy and I'd end up requesting other like photos and videos from them, that they would take the next day. But it worked. It did the job. I was exhausted one day and I was laying on the couch and I was Snapchatting my friends, on the weekend, and it hit me. I was like, oh man, Snapchat. Have you used Snapchat, James? Are you a Snapchat guy?
I'm too old.
Well, I don't know.
I'm aware of it.
You look youthful. I mean, it's I wouldn't.
Right. There's a lot of social media, most social media arguably is like a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
So I think I was on there once and I was just like, walk away. Just like,
hey,
that's lines of crack.
More power to you. I mean, yeah. But anyways, I was Snapchatting one day. Snapchat, you basically send photo and videos to your friends.
Mm-hmm.
Usually they're really small videos, they loop and you can add captions and markups, symbols, different things like that. So I was Snapchatting my friends and I realized, and I was in the middle of this project with this manufacturing company, I realized, gosh, Snapchat is an incredible visual communication tool. I wish that this manufacturing company could just Snapchat me.
Oh.
Content that they're doing instead of this messy, texting it to me, adding like notes and text and stuff. It's hard to keep track of. So what we ended up doing was we used Snapchat. I built a private Snapchat account and I showed the employees how to actually use the private Snapchat account added to a private story. At the end of the day, since Snapchat's expire 24 hours later,
yeah,
I would just go on there. Download all of their snaps every day.
Okay.
And it worked really well. I mean, they paid me for it. The project wrapped up really well. They actually brought me back in for a couple other things using the same model.
Wow.
So that's when I realized, I knew right away, like Snapchat's never going to scale. I couldn't go to other people and it would just get too messy and it's not the right tool for the job.
Right.
So I looked into some other solutions that existed online in terms of doing similar kind of visual based knowledge sharing. And there just wasn't a perfect solution that was so centered around visuals like what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously I weighed some metrics in my life and I decided, I was 22 at the time. So I was kind of, do I quit my job and try to build this thing and stuff. And so I did, I quit my job in March of 2019, I spent the next couple of months finding a team to develop it. And there's tons more I could go into, but at the end of the day, we launched our platform in January 2020. We've been growing ever since.
Nice. So let's start with the name. How did you come up with proceed.app?
Yeah. So we love the idea of helping people move forward, right? Helping people, the organization move forward by being able to document, and proceed into the future because they have all their processes documented nicely. We also just liked kind of the play on, we do step-by-step documentation. So you record short little bite-sized videos or photos. Instead of watching like a 5-minute training video, you have like all these bite-sized steps that you step through. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, I'm ready to proceed. So that's kind of how we came across that name.
Gotcha. Tell me about the dot app.
Yeah. So dot app is really just our website. So proceed.app is how you can find us if you type that into a web browser. To be honest with you, if anyone's thinking about starting a business, why we call it proceed.app is because it's trademarkable. There's other software companies called Proceed out there. But we could trademark it if we added the dot app. So
interesting.
That is why we did that.
All right. It's kind of funny anytime I look at a website that is not .com or some other .org or something like that, I think that's super cool. And in your case, it definitely works. I had a client of mine that was a photographer with drone pilot stuff. And he had whatever his business name, it was either .photo or .photography.
Yeah.
And even I, because you're so used to saying the website name, whatever.com, mm-hmm. I would say whatever.photo.com. And I was like, wait, no, there's no .com after the end of that.
Sure.
It was a weird, like people would mess up the email. So even though it was clever, we're talking, maybe 4 years ago. 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So it wasn't quite as popular. Like the different, suffixes.
It definitely was a consideration. I mean, and I got someone emailing me right now trying to get me to buy proceedapp.com. But, I think like for us, the internet has changed so much, right? I mean, the domain doesn't really, I don't think anyone hasn't been able to find us because of it.
Right.
Actually, I think the biggest issue that we get is people will type my email wrong. They'll just do andrew@proceed.com instead of .app. But
totally fair. Yeah. I love the proceed.app because in my mind, it tells you more or less that it's an app.
Yeah.
There's no what do you do?
Yeah, exactly. There's a quick, without even explaining it, it tells you what we do for sure. At least what it is. Yeah.
So tell me about the market that you were targeting. How did you decide to go to manufacturers and things where it's more physical stuff versus a service based or anything else?
Great question. So, I mean, kind of going back to my initial journey before starting Proceed.app, it was mainly the customers that I was working with were a lot of manufacturing companies. We live in Wisconsin, so manufacturing is, pretty present here. So that was probably the decision. But to be honest, another reason why I decided to start Proceed.app was I was looking at the landscape of other knowledge management and training systems. And, there were a couple that would work for manufacturing companies, but the majority of training systems and knowledge management systems that are, easy to get going and that kind of stuff are for office type jobs. So we kind of decided, we want to be the solution for small to mid-sized manufacturing companies that don't want to pay $1 million for an enterprise system, but also don't want to use their binders anymore. We want to be that solution.
All right. So is the idea, I guess just for clarity, is the idea that the individual employee would have their phone, kind of bring your own device thing, and they would watch the video or the procedures, whatever?
Yeah, so a great question. I mean, it really depends on the business. Some businesses don't let devices on the work floor, which then, you know, oftentimes you'll see them using their workstations throughout the floor. Yeah, so some manufacturing companies are totally okay with employees bringing their own device onto the work floor. Some don't allow any devices, and some provide devices to their employees. So it really depends on the business. But how employees actually use Proceed is, you know, they open the app on a device or on a computer. They can search a library by keyword to find what they're looking for. And also a feature that we see used all the time that we're actually in beta testing for right now are QR codes. So this is the idea that you can put QR codes either on equipment or in certain locations in your business so that when your employees scan them in the app, it either brings them to the content relevant to what they scanned or where they scanned it. So, you know, it's one of those kind of benefits that you get from using technology. But yeah, and then all it is, you know, it can bring up the documentation. It shows them a nice visual. So like if it's how to change the blade on a table saw, shows them, you know, step one, it's a video that might keep looping and looping until the user's ready to move on. They hit next or swipe, you know, to the next step.
All right. That's pretty cool. Yeah. So it is able to be used on a desktop as well as a tablet or phone.
Yeah, cross-platform. So Apple, Android, you know, browser, usually Google Chrome, you know, you can use this on any device.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So from a technical standpoint, was that tough to do? To come up, you're essentially having to come up with three main platforms, right?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not the the brains behind the technology. You know, I leave that for my two co-founders. But I will say, so they use a platform actually made from Madison, Wisconsin called Ionic, which is a centralized code base that deploys to both Apple and Android or iOS and Android. So it simplifies things, right? You write one code base
and
you know, it decides or knows how to convert it to each platform.
I had a programmer of mine use, I shouldn't say program of mine, a guy that I hired with a flower ordering website, coincidentally. He's putting together an app and website thing for it. So that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and so that saves a lot of time. But we do maintain a web browser version, which is its own code and a app. And then they share the database, obviously, where all our customers' data is stored. But yeah, I mean, it was definitely, it wasn't a overnight thing. You know, it took nearly 6 months to get, you know, development done to the point where we could launch. But to be honest, you know, something I love talking about, James, and, you know, I'll kind of just tap on this, but, you know, when I started Proceed, I was a non-technical guy with an idea, right? And I had some traction through a prototype or a test, you know, scenario with that Snapchat and a manufacturing company. But at the end of the day, I was a non-technical guy. I needed someone else to build it, or I needed to pay someone else to build it. And so something I love talking about is, you know, I've built Proceed on $0. I haven't paid a single dollar to the development of the actual platform, right?
Wow.
Other than, you know, some charges from Amazon and maybe like a you know, buying a theme or something, right? But the actual labor, you know, is done by my co-founders, but they weren't in on the initial vision. I, you know, started the company. I had some traction. I built this, you know, idea of where I wanted to go. And it was my job to pitch to the, you know, who would become my co-founders to join the team and actually put their sweat equity into a company to build the platform. And so, you know, it's kind of following, I love a book called The Lean Startup, which is, you know, a book maybe I'm sure a lot of your listeners might've heard of.
Oh, yeah.
But Eric Ries, you know, and it it shows you how to build MVPs, minimal viable products, and test your assumptions, learn from them, and then reiterate. And that's exactly what we did. You know, it was build a prototype, get users in there, test your assumptions. We ended up throwing away the prototype and rebuilding from the ground up over fall of 2019 to launch then in January of 2020. But you know, it's an interesting, you know, I just, if you would have asked me like 4 years ago, like, Andrew, could you start a tech company? I would have probably told you like, no, I can't do that. I don't have the skills, right? Like the technical skills. But honestly, the technology, even though, yeah, it took 6 months to develop, the technology is the easy part. I mean, so many people have ideas in terms of, oh, I want to build this app or that app or this app. And to me, like, you know, I get a lot of people come to me with their app ideas, and I love talking to them about that stuff, right? Like, yeah, let's talk about, you know, what you're doing. Like, and let's, like, I'd love to hear your idea and talk through how you could test it, right? But the risky part of 97% of the ideas is not, can the technology be built? It's, can you acquire customers, change behavior, and drive, you know, drive customer traction, right? If you can't do that, it doesn't matter if it's built. You'll end up building something to have no one use it, right? Which is what you want to avoid generally.
So, right. Yes. Like, what, I have a great business and no customers.
Yeah. And so, you know, here's like the prime example. If you say, if you come to me and you're like, yeah, you know, I'm building the Uber for bicycles or something, right? Like that. Already you've said that the technology isn't going to be hard to build because you have something already that exists that's doing mm-hmm. the same thing. All you're doing is applying it to a different market. So if that's what your idea is, that's awesome. I mean, I'm not saying that it's not doable. You can totally do it. And little niche things like that are awesome. But where your risk lies is not, can it be built? So if you're thinking to yourself, I need to go find a technical co-founder right now to build this, that's probably not what you need to do. You should do is build a no code prototype or a way of testing your assumption without writing a single line of code, right? So I hope I'm not on too big of a tangent here.
No, that's great advice. That's great advice. Essentially, what you're recommending to people is to prove the model before they stick a lot of time or money into it or effort.
Yeah, because the technology is the easy part. If you can prove, so like in my case, right, I'm not claiming to be a genius because I burned a lot of money in other businesses not doing it this way. So this comes from, it comes from failure, right? Not, you know, I hit it out of the park right away. But in the case of Proceed, I use Snapchat to gain traction. Mm-hmm. Had someone pay me to use Snapchat to do what I wanted to do with my own platform, right? So with that traction, that's really exciting now. Now I can go to a developer and say, hey, listen, I've built this. I've already proven that people would pay me for it. Now all you have to do is, you know, and it's still like, it's still a lot of work, but
yeah,
like,
all you got to do, right?
turn it into the real thing. And you know, it's less risky because I've already proven that I can change people's behavior and drive customer, traction. And so, you know, that's the model that I encourage people to go with whenever thinking about any business, but especially tech businesses. You know, there's so many great tools out there where you can build incredible prototypes mm-hmm. with no coding knowledge, you know? And so it's just getting a little bit creative, but that's the fun part of entrepreneurship, I think.
Oh, totally. Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting how I talk with business owners from the coaching and calls on call side, where they want to start this business and they keep building upon the utility of the business. Like, we should have it do this. And keep adding bells and whistles. We're like, hold on, time out. Let's make sure that your main product actually is valuable and that you can find an audience for it before you make it shinier or more special. Exactly. I guess just build upon your success, but first you have to have that initial success.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and it's important in the startup world. One of my business partners always says, you know, you don't want to boil the ocean, right? Like,
love that.
Like you can't, because you won't, right? You have to start, you know, and starting with a niche is the best way, in my opinion. So it all ties together. At the end of the day, you should be rushing to customer traction. And your first, early revenues and let your customers direct the next steps.
Yeah. Rushing to customer traction. I like that. That's cool. Yeah. That's very cool. since you're doing essentially the sales, how are you reaching out to companies and saying, hey, I know that you've trained people before, you're doing it wrong, or you're not doing efficiently by my app kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just totally, it's useful, but I guess I'm curious how you do that, since with Calls on Call, we have a challenge telling people, hey, you've been in business for a while, you may be doing some of it wrong.
Yeah. You know, so that's a great question that, so I'll tell you this, over 2020, one of the things that, we've pivoted is who our customers are.
All right.
And so we initially, when we started, we were going after the same people I was going after with my consulting business before Proceed. Small businesses, like 50 or fewer employees usually. Turns out when a worldwide pandemic hits, the last thing small businesses do is accept a new software subscription. software subscriptions are the last thing or the first thing to go, right? They don't want to get into more contracts.
Unless you're Zoom, right?
Yeah. So we had to rethink our model a lot. And we made countless pivots through 2020 that eventually led us by accident to talking with larger companies. And so what I realized is, you know, and I don't mean this, and, you know, I come from a bunch of small business owners. I'm a small business owner myself, but at the end of the day, small business owners are small typically for a reason. And it can be for a very good reason. You're a small business owner and you don't want to grow. I mean, like you're very happy with the business that you have and that's like perfect. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there's other reasons why, but what I realized quickly is like, yes, calling them small business owners and saying, hey, I have this training software. You can get rid of your binders. You can reduce errors from peer-to-peer training that exists today. Because, you know, peer-to-peer training is like the telephone game. By the time it gets to the end user, it's not the same message. But at the end of the day, small business owners weren't really interested in that because they see all of their employees anyways, and they're very hands-on in their business. So we made a shift, again, by accident. We did some Google ads, and some huge companies responded to our Google ads within the first, like, $200 that we spent.
Wow.
So,
all right.
Really, now we're talking. Really excited about that. So we started then shifting our focus to like, okay, well, maybe we do work with bigger businesses. Maybe that's who we go after. And some of the reason why we weren't going after them is just because we wanted to, test our product with smaller businesses first and lower risk businesses that, you know, could still find a lot of value and point out bugs and that kind of stuff. And we could get used to working with customers. But when a Fortune 500 company signs up for your app and is seriously interested and you know, has done their homework on you and has been on their website and likes everything that they've seen, you know, then you start to think like, oh, well, how can I get to know you better? so we ended up at that point shifting our focus to larger businesses. With that, it changed the whole sales process, right? Which is why I brought it up, because that was your question, is how do we reach these companies and how do we convince them to ditch the binders or the current ways? Well, so you know, how we reach people today, we use LinkedIn pretty well. We also have a SOP template on our website that's a lead magnet. So you can download our free Google Doc SOP template. It was actually one of the first things I threw on our website when we launched our website 3 years ago. And we get probably 12 leads a day through that. And we don't
really,
we pay for some of them, but a lot of them are organic.
Wow.
Yeah. We're number one, or like on the first page of Google, if you look up Google Doc SOP template. And so that alone has been huge in terms of a lead magnet. I mean, what that does is it identifies, hey, this person is currently working on operations. So maybe they would be interested in talking to you if they're updating or redoing some kind of operational document, right?
Right.
So that's a way of identifying a potential person who might be open to change right now. The other way is, you know, you just identify different industries, you know, and particular customers that or businesses that are likely, you know, doing something or using a training system or a method that could be beneficial or that they could benefit from a system like Proceed.app. And really one of the biggest benefits that bigger businesses get from Proceed.app versus smaller businesses is the data stuff that we do. I mean, larger businesses, when you have 300, 400, 500 employees, you don't necessarily see all your employees every day. So you depend on your SaaS tools to collect data to help you with continuous improvement and like understanding how employees are actually using your knowledge management system. So for example, like one of our probably most useful reports that we've seen larger businesses really appreciate is a report called a search report. And what this tells you is like what people are searching for inside of your knowledge library every month and if it brought back any results. So you could pull insight from this, you know, like are my employees looking for things that don't bring back any results? And if so, maybe we need to create documentation that fills those gaps. Or maybe we need to reorganize our library so that when they search certain keywords, it actually brings the relevant content up. You know, there's a ton of insight that you can pull from that kind of data. And that's why, like, that's how we get them to, or convince them to move over to our system, is showing them like, well, we can give you data insight that you don't get from binders today. We can give you insight into, you know, what types of content people are creating, you know, and how often they're viewing it, when they're viewing it, if it's like time of day kind of stuff, like these kind of next level data reports and insights that you just don't get any other way.
All right. So it sounds to me from a sales point of view that you're probably not doing a whole lot of cold calling or reaching out actively to potential clients. Is that safe to say?
So we don't cold call direct clients, because it's really difficult to know, right? Like, I mean, everyone's problem. Your customers don't usually walk around with a sign that says, I'm going through whatever problem that you solve right now, right?
No, that'd be pretty cool if they did.
It would be really awesome if they did. And that's why, so we do Google ads, and that's like, they're actively searching for a solution and we pop up on Google. Mm-hmm. So that's like a great way of having someone identify themselves to you that they are looking at that. But in terms of cold calling, who we cold call, and you know, I know cold calling kind of has a, you know, sometimes can have a ring to it that people don't like, but who we call typically are centers of influence, right? Like people who maybe they're financial consultants or manufacturing consultants, people who go have relationships with the customers that we want to be working with and want to help them even further. Because obviously, like if you're a manufacturing consultant and your client is having issues with training and knowledge retention and, you know, could use some help with that, like you're going to want someone in your Rolodex to be like, hey, you should go talk to James. I know he's got this business and he could really help you out, because that makes you look good, right?
Totally.
So that's who we call it usually, are like consultants or people who would end up working with our end users.
All right. Nice. So yeah, the cold calling thing, I don't consider it bad.
I don't either, actually. I love cold calling. I think some people have told me like cold calling is dead. I couldn't agree at all. Cause I mean, to me, it's like, it depends on what you're cold calling for. I've cold called customers before. And my response is always, or initial conversation is, hey, I'm a startup and I'm looking for some advice on something, you know, and I know that you're a professional in this field. I would love to just ask you a couple questions about how you do operations. Right. And what that does is like, I'm not asking for a sale. I'm not asking them to open their wallet. What I'm saying is like, hey, I think you're really good at this.
Yeah.
And I want your opinion on some stuff. Right.
I mean, pick your brain. Sure.
Love giving advice. They love it. And what they also, you know, love is that I'm not trying to sell them right away when I call them.
Mm-hmm.
And like, to be honest, like we are a startup and I am looking for advice all the time. I mean, there's hardly a phone call that I take that I don't learn something new about how people do operations, how they train their team. You know, it's really fun to get to know these people and to talk with them. But then at the end of the day, some of them do come and turn to be actual customers because they realize, oh, what you're doing is actually really cool. And it actually solves a problem that I'm having right now. So like, why wouldn't we, you know, start, right. And obviously you're a trustworthy guy. You told me you were a startup, you know, you're not trying to hide or be a, you know, something that you're not, you know?
Yeah.
So that's my approach to cold calling at least.
That's cool. That's cool. I like it. How did you end up finding your business partners? Did you know them before? Did you get on Craigslist and find somebody that knows how to code or?
That's a great question. So if I'm honest with you, James, the
best way.
So the initial co-founders that I found are actually not the same co-founders that I have today.
That's all right.
That was one of the biggest lessons I learned in 2019 was
all right.
about building a team and also about being a better leader, right? So I found my initial co-founder, tech guy, he brought on another friend of his and we built the first version of Proceed over the summer of 2019. And it was, we had some customers in there, but what I quickly realized is like the company was going in one direction, they were going in a totally different direction, and I didn't do a good enough job painting the vivid vision of the company, right? And you asked me, how did I find them? Well, I found the initial one just through another social circle. So
okay.
I knew he was into technology and web-based development. I knew he was good. And you know, that we started, I asked him if he was interested. Turns out he was kind of looking for side projects. So it worked out. And we ended up building a prototype that summer. How I met the current co-founders that I have after we all decided with my initial co-founders that it wasn't going to work out. I actually met Mike, my co-founder, through 1 Million Cups. So
oh, sure.
You've done 1 Million Cups.
Oh, yeah.
Mike,
yeah, I love it.
Was at my 1 Million Cups presentation that I did for Proceed, the first one ever at Appleton.
All right.
And he stuck around afterwards, introduced himself, and we had a couple coffees, you know, when I was still with my other co-founders, you know, learned a lot from him, thought he was a really cool guy. He was doing his own startup at the time. So he was just a kind of an entrepreneurial friend. And then when the initial co-founders left, I was alone, really, almost terrified. I mean, I had quit my good job and here I am with a tech product with no technical expertise, no way of changing anything. We had users in the system. Like I had no way of supporting them if something were to go wrong.
Sure.
So let me
pause you for a moment quick. Did you, like, was it cordial when you broke up with these other guys?
Yeah.
They're just like, screw you, I'm out of here.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I knew that the company couldn't move forward with them. It just wasn't going to work out.
And they were cool. So, you had to present that, I imagine, and say, hey, we're both on different things.
It was very mutual. They also knew that it wasn't going to work out. I've talked in other podcasts about this, and I say the same thing every time. You know, I don't blame anyone. It was like, you know, a lesson that had to be learned, you know, by doing it and being involved in a startup like this. And the biggest thing that I took away from it is the downfall happened because we started the company and I didn't paint the vision.
All right.
We were just like, all right, let's go, let's build it. Here's, you know, the screens that you need to, you know, the mock-ups that you need to get moving. But we didn't talk about like, are we going to raise money? You know, is there, who do we want to be our customer? Right.
That's a big one.
When can we expect to pay ourselves? Like, is this a full-time job? You know, like those kind of questions that should fit into the vision of the company and like initial expectations, we just didn't talk about. I mean, it was partially because I didn't know to talk about them. Right. But I didn't do a good enough job painting the vision. And so then frustrations happened, right? You know,
all right.
When I'm like, hey, you know, what's going on? Like, why aren't you working as much as I am? Or why are we, you know, why are we doing this, you know, when that was never agreed upon, you know, or, you know, we can't raise money until we do this and this and this, you know, like there was conversations that weren't had. And then when we started having them, it was too late. Right.
Sure.
But it all ties back to, I didn't have a vivid vision for where I wanted the company to go and how I wanted to build it. You know, by the time we started piecing in the vision, it was too late, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, they decided to leave. I didn't have to.
Oh, you didn't have to trigger it.
No. So, I mean, like basically it was, you know, through the conversations that we had, it was understood that like, this can't move on this way. So either I leave or you guys leave. and you know, it just wasn't going to work. So they left. And I have no negative feelings against them, right? Like they taught me one of the biggest lessons that I needed to learn. And I hope that, you know, they learned stuff too. And I'm sure they did. And I'm still connected with them and, you know, they're friends. And so, very amicable, and clean. It was very clean.
All right.
Which I realize I'm like really lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. You are not the first person to have a business partnership go south.
I'm sure. Yeah.
So yeah, it's a thing. It's probably more common that they don't work than they do.
I mean, it's like a marriage, right? I mean, it's like any relationship that you have, you know, communication is key. Totally. That was something I learned out. And also like, you know, some people just aren't meant to be together and that's okay. That's all right. Like you can't force it. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if anyone's listening to this and being like, well, what did you do differently with your next team? You know, we set up a probationary period, right? It was understood on both sides. Like, hey, I want to make sure that we can work together successfully. I don't want to rush into this. So let's get going, you know, but let's have some options in terms of if things don't work out. And here's when we review the options.
All right.
That's how we move forward there. But to be honest, like my team right now is great. I mean, Darren and Mike are two just incredible individuals and engineers. They're way older than I am. I don't know if they like it when I say this, but they could both be my dad, you know, like, they could be my dads, which is actually like a really cool, kind of company culture kind of thing.
Sure.
You know, they see technology way differently than I do. And the balance of that is really important. So it actually is a huge strength of ours. But I'm very, very fortunate to be able to wake up every day and work for Darren and Mike.
Nice.
And I know that they do the same for me, and it's working really well. We've had nothing but good times so far.
Very cool. Very cool. I do want to ask you, since you brought up the age thing, most of the manufacturers that I know, as far as the business owners, are older generations. So is it challenging to come to them and say, hey, I have this technology-based improvement for your business? Or are most of them tech savvy, since the machines that they got are, they're always coming out with new and better things? Like,
yeah, that's a great question. That's a great question. Typically I don't talk to business owners anymore. I mean, it depends on the business. But I'll be talking to an HR person or a manager, operations manager, that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, I mean, like, I personally don't like to attach, you know, comfort level of technology to age. So that's why I usually will say, you know, to people who are less comfortable with technology, you know, this is how I talk to them, or this is, you know, how we've made it easy for you. Because I mean, to be honest, like I've, you know, have friends of mine that I'm like, I can't believe that you've grown up with the internet your whole life, because like you would literally give your social security number out to someone who asked for it online. Right. Like it's amazing. But you know, at the end of the day, like, what I think is really cool is business is business, you know, technology or not, like business is business. And what I mean by that is, like, people who have been in business longer usually can understand when a piece of technology, or even if it's not technology, whatever product you're selling, they can see how this is going to affect their business. If you can show them an ROI, hey, you use Proceed.app, we'll save you 30% or 67% on your onboarding time. Like,
you're talking.
Why would it doesn't matter if I'm a genie in a bottle or app, you know, on a mobile phone, right? Like, if you can save money, do it.
Yeah, that's fair. That's totally fair. Oh, I love it. That's super cool. So I guess from a standpoint of your business now and where it's come in the past year, I feel like you talked like you've been in business for 9 years and gone through all these trials and tribulations, but it's been a year, year and a half.
Yeah. So in May, it will be 3 years that I've had the business going.
Okay.
But the platform's been around for just about a year. But I'll tell you this, I mean, in technology and in any startup, like the faster you move, the better.
Right. Right. Very true.
You know, in many ways, I feel like we've moved pretty slowly, but in other ways, we've been very quick in terms of, you
very
know,
cool.
I mean, yeah, I can't believe that it was less than 3 years ago that, you know, I went through all the partner stuff that we just talked about. So,
yeah,
I mean, it's pretty crazy, but yeah, we haven't been around that long. It's definitely not been 9 years, or at least I hope not. So.
Sure. Yeah. Time flies here. So what do you see going on with your business? Let's call it in the next 3 years.
Yeah. So we are thrilled about some of the opportunity that we see with helping particularly businesses that are dealing with institutional knowledge loss from retirement. So this is something that we are working on. From retirement is a huge issue in the workforce right now. I mean, like 60% of the workforce is up for retirement over the next 10 years.
Which 60%?
Yeah, 10 years, yeah.
Wow, all right. So
it's a huge concern for a lot of leaders and businesses, and they know that the incoming workforce sticks around fewer years or has small, you know, like average employee tenure is like 3.2 years versus 10.7 years is the exiting workforce.
I have a pile of resumes that says that it's about 4 months.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, there's some huge workforce and workplace human resource challenges that we're going through, and we're just thrilled to be a part of it and helping businesses with it. I mean, one of our taglines that we say, and if you go to www.turnoversucks.com, it'll actually bring you to our website, because that is what we do. Most businesses think about employee turnover and they're like, how can I get employees to stay longer? You know, how can I increase employee retention? We are starting this, wanting to get people to think differently about employee turnover. And I'm calling it a movement, although like it's not really a movement, but I want to challenge businesses with employees to think, how can, you know, it's the solution to employee turnover is not just retention. Anything you can do to get retention up is great. Mm-hmm. But if you can make employee turnover just suck less, that'll bring huge returns to you. You'll always have employee turnover, no matter what. Humans die.
Okay. Right? So you're saying essentially, if you can get someone up to speed faster to replace the person that left?
If you can get someone up to speed faster, if you can capture knowledge from people before they leave, if you can get your operations in order so that when you lose an employee or say goodbye to an employee and you welcome a new employee in, it just doesn't pain you. Right.
It's
done. Like, oh yeah, we have it all figured out. Here it is. Of course, you're going to always have, it's always going to be painful. You're never going to get rid of everything. Right.
Right.
But at the end of the day, if you can just make it suck less.
That's fair. That is an interesting perspective, because that's a problem that, although we'll fight tooth and nail to prevent it, it's just like a flat tire. Eventually it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, it's just better to make it easier to deal with rather than to attempt to avoid it forever. Interesting. I like that. That's impressive. Yeah.
So that's what I'm most excited about over the next 3 years. And I think we are the right solution at the right time for manufacturing companies, because if you're not worried about employee turnover and the effects of retirement for your business, you need to be. We just love helping businesses navigate that. So,
yeah, that's a constant thing. It's, you know, what's funny, 'cause I was thinking of this the other day. I saw a van for a plumber go by, and on the van, almost as big as their logo, it said, "Always looking for quality people."
Yeah.
But you got that permanently on your van. Does that mean that you guys are so bad to work for, or that you have so many customers? Like, you have so many customers coming in that you can't possibly take care of all of them.
Yeah.
Is it a combination of both? It just seemed weird that was so permanent on their little van running down the road.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's definitely something businesses always need to be thinking about, but it's only going to get worse. That's my thing. So like, why spend a ton of time and headache on trying to get people to stay longer when they won't?
Yeah.
Why not just make it easier to accept it?
To deal with a replacement. Interesting. That is a fascinating, fascinating way to look at that. That's impressive. I like it. Cool. Well, Andrew, thank you so much for being on the show. This is super cool.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. I hope it was at least some nuggets of interest or value to be taken from it, but yeah, really happy to be on today, and thanks for the opportunity to share my story.
Dude, I think you helped a lot of people with this. So that's the name of the game, right? A couple nuggets of wisdom wrapped up in a cute little podcast, right?
Perfect. Awesome.
This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. We are underwritten locally by the Bank of Sun Prairie. If you're listening to this on the web, which you probably are, please give a thumbs up, subscribe, like, comment, share with all your peoples, because there's probably more than just you that could use a few tidbits, right? From us and Andrew. My name is James Kateman, and Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering and receptionist services for service businesses across the country on the web at callsoncall.com. As well as Draw In Customers Business Coaching, offering business coaching services for entrepreneurs looking for growth on the web at drawincustomers.com. And of course, The Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur and all of us, available wherever fine books are sold. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, as well as our guest, Andrew Schmitz, the co-founder of Proceed.app. Andrew, how can people find you, or I guess reach out to you if they
want? Yeah, please reach out on LinkedIn is best way. So Andrew Schmitz on LinkedIn.
And will you spell your last name for us?
Yeah, S-C-H-M-I-T-Z.
Awesome. So look for Andrew Schmitz on LinkedIn, and it's proceed.app to find the website. Awesome. Past episodes can be found morning, noon, and night at the podcast link found at drawincustomers.com. Thank you for listening. We will see you next week. I want you to stay awesome. And if you do nothing else, enjoy your business.